Yo, this is the Fat King Madzal saying, you're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Ha!
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nancy Barber and Bill Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Ulster County lost out on $12 million because of the county's Department of Social Services' failure to properly account for monies anticipated but ultimately not received. Melissa Schott of PKF O'Connor Davies, the accounting firm conducting an annual audit of the county's 2022 books, said, and I quote, "It looks like there hasn't been a reconciliation of receivables. It looks like there will be a write-off of those receivables," end quote. Ulster County Executive Jen Masker did not return a reporter's call on September 12th about the missing money. Assistant Deputy County Executive Evan Minnis downplayed the error, saying county governments, and I quote, "will regularly adjust revenues they do not receive as part of the DSS claims process. In Ulster County, we typically adjust $3 to $4 million per year as part of this process. However, we are in the midst of an audit spanning multiple years. We should expect a larger than typical adjustment," end quote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Raymond Pignone reports for Columbia Green Media that small county fairs in New York are eligible for state reimbursements for youth competitions after Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation addressing the issue on September 12th. The bill, from State Senator Michelle Hinchey and Assemblyperson Carrie Warner, lowers the required amount fairs must give out from $5,000 to $2,500. Locally, the Greene County Youth Fair in July and the Labor Day weekend Columbia County Fair are both smaller fairs. Hinchey said in a statement, and I quote, "Small county fairs across New York State provide invaluable leadership opportunities that help young people build independence and life skills and gain confidence in their abilities. Through this legislation, we're providing our small county fairs with a critical economic tool to help them maintain youth fair involvement and support our next generation of leaders," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Molly Burke reports in the Times Union that on September 13th, Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation increasing the penalties for telemarketers who violate the Do Not Call Registry rule. The previous fine was $11,000 for violating the rule, and now it is $20,000. Hochul said, and I quote, "Every day, hardworking New Yorkers are forced to field call after call from relentless telemarketers. Today, we're raising the penalty for violators of the Do Not Call Registry to deter telemarketers, protect New Yorkers, and send a clear message that New York won't tolerate these frustrating, unsolicited calls," end quote. The Federal Trade Commission runs the Do Not Call Registry. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button. To become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, September 15th. Local early morning temperatures range from 43 degrees in Steventown to 50 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 68 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low. It is going to be sunny with a high of 70 degrees happening at 3 p.m. Overnight, temperatures drop to 57 degrees. Then tomorrow will be much the same but a bit cloudier. High of 73 at 4 p.m. 52 degrees overnight takes us into another nice looking Sunday with a high of 73. Monday looks like we finally get some rain again, but the temperatures stay moderate, hitting 73 degrees. And it looks like this is it. Fall has arrived to New York. I know some people really like hard dates on the calendar, but I prefer criteria like no more pollen, foliage going dormant, and no more days above 80 degrees. Pretty soon you're going to get fun reminders like check those smoke detectors and get that furnace maintenance. Okay, back to fun while we can still have it. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 3:48 a.m., low tide at 10:29 a.m., high tide again at 4:17 p.m., then low tide once again at 10:40 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 75 degrees and the tide strength is high. Sunset today will be at 6:53 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:31 a.m. Looking way up, we see Anhadouken was released yesterday and is expected to cause G2 class disturbances with possible auroras for northern states tonight or tomorrow. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible until dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The current sunspot number is 110, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
We love roll call, y'all. Boogie Down Productions, Rob Bass, Dana Dane, Molly Marr, Olatunji, Chuck D, Ray Charles, EPMD, EU, Alberta Hunter, Run DMC, Stetsasonic, Sugar Bear, John Coltrane, Big Daddy Kane, Salt and Pepper, Luther Vandross, McCoy Tyner, Biz Markie, New Edition, Otis Redding, Anita Baker, Thelonious Monk, Marcus Miller, Branford Marcellus, James Brown, Wayne Shorter, Tracy Chapman, Miles Davis, Force MDs, Oliver Nelson, Fred Wesley, Maceo, Janet Jackson, Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, George Clinton, Count Basie, M2May, Stevie Wonder, Bobby McFerrin, Dexter Gordon, Sam Cooke, Parliament Funkadelic, Al Jarreau, Teddy Pendergrass, Joe Williams, Wynton Marsalis, Phyllis Hyman, Sade, Sarah Vaughan, Roland Kirk, Keith Sweat, Cool Moe Dee, Prince, Ella Fitzgerald, Diana Reeves, Aretha Franklin, Bob Marley, Bessie Smith, Whitney Houston, Dionne Warwick, Steel Pulse, Little Richard, Mahalia Jackson, Jackie Wilson, Cannonball and Nat Adderley, Quincy Jones, Marvin Gaye, Charles Mingus, and Mary Lou Williams. We want to thank you all for making our lives just a little brighter here on We Love Radio.
And we are live in the studio today with three people who are part of the, how do you pronounce it, Dromedary?
Dromedary.
Dromedary Records 30th Anniversary Festival this week in, part in Kingston, part, but most in Catskill. First Al Crisafulli, the founder.
Yes.
And the man behind Dromedary Records. And then Nick and Lisa, WGXC listeners know from the Radiant Point show on the first Monday of the month at 10 p.m.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you guys...
hey, everyone.
Yes. Say hello, Nick, too, so we know
hello,
what
hello.
Your voice sounds like. And you guys are in several different bands. One new one.
We have a duo, a trio together, sometimes a foursome together called Silence on the Other End. I play in two other bands, Cathedral Ceilings and World Sucks, and Lisa is in Aeon Station and the Goddess Party.
Yes, and Gramercy Arms.
And Gramercy Arms.
Yeah. Goddess Party has a show. Can I talk about that one, too? Can I plug that real quick?
Sure.
Goddess Party has a show coming up at O Positive. We're kicking off the whole thing on October 6th at the Old Dutch Church in Kingston. So, yeah.
Woohoo.
Anyway, let's move on to...
O Positive, always a good time. But there's a festival this weekend.
Yes.
So which of the bands that you guys are in are playing the festival this week?
Cathedral Ceilings. We're on the Dromedary label. So.
And what time? What stage?
Nine.
I think 9 o'clock.
Or day.
Saturday.
At Avalon Lounge.
At Avalon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you guys are DJing too.
Yeah.
We have a DJ set. That day at 4:15. Thank you, Al, for adding us to that.
couldn't have done this without you.
But we're calling our set R.I.P. Jukebox, and this will be sort of an homage to the old Maxwell's New Jersey Jukebox. And also the Court Tavern Jukebox, which many of us have put many of our dollars into and listened to over the years. And I think a lot of people that are going to John Fest might appreciate some of the music that we'll be playing. So we're excited to bring that to life.
So let's, Al, tell us what is Dromedary Records first?
So Dromedary Records is a record label, indie rock primarily record label that we founded in 1993, my wife and my buddy and I. And we have just been at this for 30 years. And when we thought about it at the beginning of the year, we thought, geez, 30 years, 30 years of doing anything is worth having a party. And so we decided to do something, and it just sort of mushroomed into this 3-day thing with 19 bands and all kinds of DJs. And it should be a fun time. Lots of bands from the 90s that many of whom haven't played in a long time. So,
yeah, you've got a couple people coming out of retirement or coming out of hibernation.
Yeah, Das Damen, who were relatively big in the late 80s and early 90s. They were on SST Records and Twin Tone Records. They're going to be playing their first shows this week in more than 30 years. Matter Rose, who were a New York City-based indie rock band in the 90s, haven't played in 24 years. Lotion, haven't played in 11 years. It's either going to be a ton of fun or a giant disaster.
It's going to be
or both. Or both.
Well, we'll have the beers flowing,
yes,
so I'm sure.
That too, yes.
It will be fun.
Well, some of it's like riding a bike. They'll just get... back, right?
It's funny to listen to them talk about it because they talk. Nick and I were just talking about this before we came out here, because they talk about it in terms of muscle memory of things that they, you know, that they did together 30 years ago or 20 years ago, and then they get together in a room and it just clicks. It just turns right back on again, so that's really super interesting. You know, I know that it's going to be a lot of fun for some of the folks who are attending, who have, you know, who grew up with these songs, you know, a lot of these musicians are still doing things that are, you know, relevant. They're in other bands now, and so they're getting together with these bands that we loved, you know, 25 years ago or whatever, and you know, we're going to hear these songs, and for them, it's kind of the same. They're, you know, they're hearing them for the first time in 25 years, so it's going to be kind of neat to be a part of that.
So give people listening the lay of the land. This starts on Friday night in Kingston?
Yes, it starts on Friday night at Tubby's in Kingston. Doors open there at 6:30, and the first thing we're going to do is have a DJ set by Jeff Economy, who's a DJ.
Another WGXC DJ.
Yeah,
DJ,
GXC.
Yes.
Great Snack Point Charlie show, and he's going to kick things off. nice.
Well earned.
Our audience is a little slow today.
And then we will have performances by Speed the Plow and Young Woo, who both bands play very infrequently. They do play. Young Woo, you may know, is four-fifths of the Feelies. And with some members of Speed the Plow and some friends that sit in with them. And then Speed the Plow will come on after Jeff's set, and then Young Woo will close things out on Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday, we essentially have music all day. in Catskill. So we move everything over to Catskill. We kick things off at 2 with a reading at Spike's Record Rack by Bela Krumpecker from his book Love, Death, and Photosynthesis, which is just a beautiful, beautiful book. And I think you mentioned he's going to be on your show tomorrow.
It's tentatively tomorrow at Thursday at 6:15.
Gotcha.
But he still was checking a couple things.
Gotcha.
Hopefully it's Thursday or Friday.
Okay. That is it's just a tremendous book. It's a heartbreaking book, but it's also a heartwarming book, and it's going to be really neat and fitting to have him come out and kick things off at 2 on Saturday. Then we move over to the Avalon at 2:30 for a performance by a New Jersey punk band called Civic Mimic, and then we kind of move back and forth in the afternoon between bands at the Avalon and bands at Left Bank Ciders. While there are bands playing at Left Bank, we'll have DJs at the Avalon, so you'll kind of have the ability to sort of wander around Catskill and enjoy the town and experience the town, and also see live music or hang out with the DJs or do, you know, pretty much whatever you want. And I think the performances at Left Bank, weather permitting, will be outside on the patio.
And hopefully it dries up a little because it's been a little wet this week.
Mm-hmm. I think the forecast is favorable.
We'll have to ask the weather warlock.
Knocking on all the wood.
Dear weather warlock,
keep the rain away.
Weather warlock is saying what?
Sunshine.
Oh, that sounds positive.
70 degrees and sunny.
Exactly. What? No humidity. Great.
Thanks, Weather Warlock.
Yes.
What are you guys all looking forward to the most? Which band or who haven't you seen before, or who have you seen that's really great?
There's a lot of bands I haven't seen. I definitely never saw Das Damen, and I've gotten to be friends with Lyle the drummer, so it'll be. And I've seen him in his current band, so it'll be great to see him in Das Damen. I've never seen Lotion. I've never seen the Mommy Heads. So it'll be great to see them. And my band is sandwiched, thank you, Al, between Antietam, who I love and who are phenomenal, and Das Damen. So I'm just kind of stoked for that, you know.
You got a good slot.
Got a good spot, yes.
Yeah.
It pays to be on the label.
It does pay, yes. It only helps out.
Right.
It's going to be a blast. And then I'm looking forward to not having to do anything Sunday and just watch all the bands.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
What about you?
What about me? I'm looking forward to seeing everyone who's going to be there. That's.
Yeah.
It's going to be such a party.
It's going to be a party.
You know? So, I'm literally excited to see every single band that's playing. Especially Cathedral Ceilings, Nick.
You see us enough.
That's true. That's good. Anyway, I'm just super pumped about the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's I can't like pinch me. It's like so cool.
I think for me, in addition to just seeing everyone and all of these people that a lot of these people I haven't seen since the pandemic, so it's going to be great to just be with them in the same place. But musically, I'm very interested in the set that Overheard is going to play. Mm-hmm. They're a young Kingston, New York band, and I love them. And it's going to be neat to see them in this setting, you know, sort of sandwiched in with all of these indie rock veteran bands, you know. So that's kind of neat. And also a couple of just phenomenal guitar players. Tarik Key from Antietam is just one of the great indie rock guitar players, and also Nick Berry from the band Dots Will Echo, who are playing on Saturday at Left Bank. Nick is just a wonderful guitar player and songwriter, and so I'm really, really looking forward to seeing those two players in particular.
And I guess I would add, if Jeff Economy was here, he would probably mention that he is looking forward to seeing Four Fifths of the Feelies.
For sure. He might say that twice.
I think so.
So like 8/10.
Yeah.
And then I have a friend in Florida who I sent a note about this, we must have seen Das Damen. Maybe it was a new music seminar in 1988.
Okay. Wow.
That's how old I am.
Yeah.
But she was excited because I don't know which venue are they playing at.
Damen is at the Avalon.
Ah, so they are. So there'll be a live web stream. So she's actually looking forward to tuning in.
Yes.
To the live web stream. Yeah. We always WGXC has live web streams from the Avalon Lounge, and Spike at Spike's Record Rack has his does his show from there often on Wednesdays, and when he has special events, he usually turns it on too. So I think we'll. Actually, on FM on Saturday, we're going to start off the whole festival on 90.7 FM with, how you pronounce his name, Bella?
Bela.
I only know his name from print, and I got to get used to it before I talk
like
to him.
Like Bela Fleck. Yeah.
It's, I think the WGXC component of this is one of the coolest things about it, because when we started talking about doing this, we wanted to have it at a small sort of intimate venue, but that naturally limits how many people can come, and so the fact that we're able to do that, but also have the thing broadcast so that everyone can hear it, it really adds to this. So,
and one of the things I'm most excited about is this: you got this perfect idea of having a festival in Catskill where you can go from the Avalon Lounge to Left Bank Ciders to Spike's Record Rack.
Yeah,
A nice day in Catskill—that is just a perfect fun day to hang out.
Sure.
Without all these great bands, even and add all these great bands, it's like a really good idea.
Well, from an organizational standpoint, it's really. I didn't want to get involved with like security and port-a-johns and insurance and all of that, but it's also kind of great to take advantage of this infrastructure that's already here. Where there are music venues, and restaurants and places to shop and things like that are all. Great and sort of aligned with what we're doing, and so it's kind of from that standpoint, it's going to be pretty neat.
And we should point out Tubby's is a great place too in Kingston, certainly aligned with all this other stuff too.
For sure, and this the staff and the owners of all of these places are just the nicest people, who almost a year ago said yes just to this ridiculous idea. Hey, can I have your venue on this day? And they all said yes, which still boggles my mind. But it's because they, they're such great people. So it's going to be very cool.
All right. Anything else we should mention?
I was going to say one of the people I'm looking forward to seeing perform is Jenny Toomey, because she lives right in Catskill.
Yeah.
And I think the last time we saw her was when she played with Tsunami, her original 90s band, and they had
they played the Avalon like a year, 6 months
ago? It was like a few months ago, and then they played, and then they went out to LA and they played a show in LA. But she'll be joined by Frank Bruno, who also played in Tsunami, and who else is joining her?
Gene Cook from Ida.
Oh, Gene Cook, right.
And that's going to be just fantastic, and they're just such lovely people. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really, I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Yeah.
And of course, all the dromedary bands that are playing Stuyvesant.
So who is all
Stuyvesant?
Speed the Plow and Stuyvesant and the Mommy Heads and Civic Mimic, Joy Cleaner, of course, Cathedral Ceilings, and I think I got them all. I think Guy Capizzolatto III, who will be playing at Left Bank on Saturday with Carrie Bradley, who is a wonderful violin player and songwriter who. Also lives in the Hudson Valley, so that should be pretty neat.
Awesome.
And I'm guessing running a record label has changed slightly since 1993.
yes, a little bit. And it's very much a thing you do for fun in 2023.
That's sort of my remembrance of it in 1993, too.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, at least in 1993, you had the little twinkle of the possibility that maybe somebody might buy the thing.
There were some labels that rose to larger than out of your house,
But it's never really been about that for us. It's more been about the love of the bands and the love of the scene and being a part of the whole thing. And so this whole festival is kind of a celebration of that.
Well, thank you for doing it for 30 years. That's where is that audience there?
There they are.
That is a lot of work and dedication, and we try to do our part to help like the Hudson Valley music scene and local musicians, and certainly you have been doing that. And this festival this weekend is going to do that, and I'm sure a lot of people are coming to Catskill and shopping at other places on Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope that's part of the idea. Mm-hmm. There are still some tickets available. Just saying.
What's the website address if you want information about all that?
Well, if you want information about tickets, you can either go to dromedary-records, that's dromedary-records.com, or to the websites of Tubby's, which is tubbyskingston.com, or the avalonlounge.com, and tickets are available on either of those sites.
Mm-hmm. And they get you into the Left Bank Ciders too, or how does
that work? we'll be there, but you purchase the tickets from the Avalon website.
All right.
Are there any day of, if you walk into Avalon, can you just buy a ticket there?
So I am recommending that people buy in advance, because mm-hmm. we're getting close to sold out on all three nights. Wow. And so if we're sold out, we're sold out. Unfortunately, mm-hmm.
there's only so much room, and then you have to listen on the radio.
Exactly.
Right now on the phone we have with us from Columbus, Ohio. I'm already getting the name wrong. I'm going to say Bella, but it's not. It's Bella. How do you?
Bella.
Koa Krumpiker. I don't know. You say it, Bella.
You said it so good, before we go on.
That's how it's my. Every time I do that, off the air I'm perfect, and on the air I fail.
It's not an easy name.
And so you're joining us today because you're going to be joining us in Catskill on Saturday, opening up the Dromedary Records Festival that's in, it starts Friday night at Tubby's in Kingston, and then Saturday it moves to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill and the Avalon Lounge in Catskill and Spike's Record Rack in Catskill. And I think you are reading at 2 p.m. at Spike's Record Rack is what I was told.
Yeah, I believe that's it. So I'll be reading from my book, Love, Death, and Photosynthesis, which came out just about 2 years ago, right about then, on Don Giovanni Records has a publishing imprint, so it came out on that. So, and it's still doing well, I guess. It's still selling. So I'll be reading a couple things from that.
And does the book have a tie to Dromedary Records, or are you there sort of because you are in the sort of scene with some of the other bands, or what?
Well, I've known Al for a while. He actually, many years ago, put a single out by a band from Columbus called Moviola, and I put out several of their records. Actually, I put out their last record, too, which came out last year.
Because you also run Anyway Records?
Yeah, so I run Anyway Records. So Al and I know each other from, being small record label folks, but just enjoying the same type of music. And my book, which is about two musicians from Columbus who died, Jerry Wick and Jenny May, and both had substance abuse issues and mental health issues, and Jenny ended up homeless for a long time in Columbus. So I wrote this book about both of them and sort of the broth of the soup of the book is music. So there's music all within, almost every chapter, because that's how we all came together, and probably still keeps us together in, whatever sort of metaphysical way, I guess. So a lot of people that grew up in the 80s and 90s, like high school, college, would relate to a lot of the stories that are there, because a lot of the bands that were, pulling us together as a community are within the book, Mudhoney and Pavement and the Grifters and Guided by Voices. And I put out a couple Guided by Voices records way back in the 90s too. So there's all of this music that is tying together substance use and mental illness. And my profession is I'm a social worker and therapist, and I spent many years working with the homeless here in Columbus. So it's kind of like two people died and I was sort of reborn, I guess, transformed from a record store guy to, you know, somebody who's trying to give back.
So I think in your description of the book, you've explained the two-thirds of the title. I think I understand where there's some love and there's some death in the book. I still don't understand where the photosynthesis is.
So Jerry Wick had put a song out on Anyway, on a songwriter compilation I put out. And the song was actually called Love, Death, and Photosynthesis. And I think, you know, like what I sort of like about this photosynthesis is this, you know, transformation in light and processing, I guess. So it just sort of made sense. But people can read whatever they wanted, but it's based off of Gary's song. And the song he wrote is pretty dark because he wrote it a couple years before he died, but the song is about love and death. So it's I guess everything sounds very melancholy and dark, but I don't think it is. There's a lot of like funny things within the pages.
And I guess classic rock sort of has a lot of these sort of books, you know, maybe even Jim Carroll, I guess. I don't know if that's classic rock, but I don't think of too many off the top of my head books like this from indie rock.
You know, I think what I sort of tell people is like I write, but I don't really write about music, if that makes sense. I tell stories, I suppose, and I write in a very stream of conscious kind of way. So I wasn't like, it's not like, it's not like our band could be your life, necessarily. So it's really, I think it's a story about friendship, and how music pulls people together, because that is the one constant that I've always had in my life. And in talking about that underground music scene, how it pulled together so many like misfits and outcasts and awkward people and people probably on the spectrum in some way, right? So pulling them all together to form this community, and perhaps the wider part of it, and I guess this is where, because some people have said it's kind of like this band could be your life, is how we've been able to form this community, not just in the United States, but worldwide. And that's, you know, I think what Al's Weekend is a celebration of that, because people are coming from all over, and there's a wide variety of bands.
Yeah, I was reading the I guess a paragraph describing the book, and I thought to myself, oh well, this could be Tampa. I mean, I grew up in the Tampa music scene, so this sounds like a lot of things that happened to people I knew in a music. So it's sort of I guess maybe that's why it's getting compared to that other book that is the, you know, the most indie rock book there is, or whatever.
The band, this band could be your life. I mean, I've had like people compare it to, you know, and not like, I'm not saying like I'm Jack Kerouac, but people have compared it to On the Road and sort of things like that, because I think it is a story about transformation and self-discovery as well. But yeah, people aren't going to read the book where I'm like breaking down Slanted and Enchanted. I'm not a musician, so just sort of a hyper fan.
And what bands that folks might know were in Columbus, or that are, you know, maybe mentioned in the book, or
yeah, so the book is very Midwest. It's very Ohio centric. So, you know, in Columbus, like, nobody really got famous from Columbus, from the 90s, but it is sort of thought of as sort of a high mark of the Columbus scene, music scene. So it was Thomas Jefferson, Slave Apartments, New Bomb Turks, Skrull.
Yeah, Skrull was my favorite, I think, of all the Columbus bands. Yeah.
RC Mob, and then, you know, you had Jerry's band.
Oh, Royal Crescent Mob. I forgot about Royal Crescent Mob. Yeah. Boy, I love that. The first, I think it was the first record before. Or maybe it was
Omerita.
The first. Yeah, or the first major label record. One of those. I saw
it's
them.
Been the world.
Yeah.
And then you had like sort of like the next level of artists that really had, you know, someone like Jenny May had more fans in Boston and New York than she ever did in Columbus. So you had like Jenny and Moviola and a lot of bands in Ohio, especially, you know, even though Guided by Voices were from Dayton, they played Columbus, you know, in the early 90s more than they played Dayton. So, and then down in Cincinnati, you had the Ass Ponies and the Wolverton Brothers and Afghan Whigs. So, you know, it's kind of weird. You know, Ohio's a pretty fertile ground for artists, not just, you know, musicians, but also writers and actors. But, you know, with music, there's not that many famous folks from Ohio. You know, Devo and Chrissy Hines from here, and 21 Pilots are from Columbus, so I guess they're pretty famous. But you know, during that time, it just wasn't. But you know, we all loved each other, so I guess that's sort of that. But yeah, it's weird. Unless you're a total nerd, a lot of the bands I named, you wouldn't really know. You know, your average Joe, you're not going to be able to go to Target and buy their records.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson's Slave Apartment didn't have a great Walmart name.
No, not at all. So I don't know, like I wouldn't even say that the scene aimed high. We just kind of plotted our way through, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So Saturday, you're going to read from the book, or you're going to talk about the book, or you're going to take questions?
I'm going to read from the book, and if anybody has questions, I'll take questions. So I try to make it as entertaining as possible, if that makes sense. You know, my girlfriend, who's a writer, always says to me, she's like, just read. Like, you get caught up in telling a story while you're reading a story. I get distracted pretty easy, so I'll try to be somewhat disciplined.
Well, that's easy to do. You get all telling the story is fun, and some of the stories you probably told before, and you have a whole shtick.
Yeah. I mean, that is sort of how it is. It's like, I'm pretty comfortable in front of people, so it's weird. I'm very comfortable reading, or I teach at Ohio State, or like being in front and talking about things, educating, being funny, but I am not comfortable in a crowd, so I'd rather be in front than in a crowd, which is kind of weird.
That is a little, but you're more. It seems like you're more exposed on the stage, but you somehow feel the other way. You're not exposed, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so. I've just never. So I don't drink. I used to drink. I quit drinking about 21 years ago, and I was I promoted shows in Columbus for many years. So I always wanted crowds to show up. And I didn't have a TV for most of the 90s, so I went to shows. I went out 4 or 5 nights a week, and I realized some years after I quit drinking was, oh, I don't like crowds. Like, I don't like very big concerts. When I go to a show, I'm right in front. I'm at the, you know, it's weird. If people buy the book, there's photographs in the books, and I'm standing at the almost exact same spot, and in the photos that I'm in, which is like either to the right or left of the stage, like right next to it. And that's where I still am. And if a show is really crowded, if I can't get there, I'll usually leave early because I don't like to be in the midst of it. And I realized, like, when I was drinking, I would just get obliterated, and that was probably one way to deal with the anxiety, the social anxiety.
Yeah, you just don't notice it then. Was it difficult to start? I mean, I guess you did a book tour when the book first came out. Was it difficult to sort of start that process?
You know, I don't. My concern was I've got dyslexia, so reading is difficult for me, as odd as it sounds. So I was worried I wouldn't be able to read. If that makes sense. Like it wouldn't be it wouldn't sound like when you hear writers read or audiobooks. And I've tried, like, I'm in the process of making this audiobook, but honestly, I keep messing it up. And then I just get, then I just laugh, and it's like me and the engineer are just laughing for an hour, and we get, like, four pages read.
Are you doing an audiobook of this book or a different book?
I am doing one of this book, but it's going really slow. So, you know, the book came out during COVID, and so I read as much as I can. And so, yeah, I did a tour of the Northwest. I did a small Southeast Southern tour last November. I've read in Chicago, and I've read in Cleveland. I've read in New York City three times, I think. Yeah, three times. I've read in Pittsburgh. So it's sort of like, if people ask me, I'll go. But for a lot of those shows, it's kind of like DIY. I just book them myself. I mean, I don't have an agent. I don't have like a speaker agent. But, you know, for the most part, well, like I said, I'm very comfortable with it. And I guess I was a little nervous. I mean, the one of the readings I did in New York City, there were like 120 people there in this bar bookstore. And that was very intimidating because I think that was like the third time I had read in public. It was like, oh my gosh. So usually, I mean, that was by far, except for Columbus, you know, the most people I've ever had. I mean, I've read in front of, like, I did a reading in Columbus the other night with a writer from Connecticut, and there were four people there. So,
we've all had shows like that.
Yeah. And the nice thing about, you know, being my age is it's all gravy to me. You know, I'm just glad that people like the book and they're responsive to it, and like I said, people are still buying it. It went into its second printing like a month after it came out, so that was a surprise.
You can't ask for much more than that. That's great.
No, yeah, it was great. And you know, I'm a fairly unknown writer, and it's on a, you know, small publishing house, so very pleased with that. But I you know, like, I think a lot of people in the underground scene, we all sort of know each other, especially if we live long enough. You know, my kids used to say that, well, Dad, you know everybody. I'm like, I'm just old and I live in Columbus. So
welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Now they're turning their backs on the bipartisan budget deal. Speaker McCarthy made with me just a few months ago.
President Joe Biden is critical of hardline House Republicans, accusing them of reneging on the federal debt limit deal, some seeming eager to shut the government down at the end of the month. This comes as tension within the House GOP grows. When asked about threats some right-wing members are making to try and oust him, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said he's ready to battle it out.
Threats don't matter, and sometimes people do those things because of personal things, and that's all fine.
The Republican-led House is struggling to pass what are normally bipartisan appropriations, with leaders this week canceling a vote on a defense bill. But McCarthy says he remains hopeful that Congress could pass a stopgap. Republican Nebraska Representative Don Bacon describes McCarthy as rightfully irritated.
There's no reason why these appropriations bills have been stood up by a few folks. It's holding up the progress of the House, and it undermines our party.
The Republican-controlled state Senate in the battleground of Wisconsin voted Thursday to fire the state's top nonpartisan elections official. Megan Wolf says she's being targeted because election deniers didn't get what they wanted in 2020.
During my 12 years working as a nonpartisan election official, I've learned that when politicians on either side of the aisle are upset with me, it's usually because I will not bend to political pressure.
Wisconsin Attorney General Democrat Josh Call has filed suit, arguing lawmakers don't have the authority to oust Wolf and accusing them of undermining their elections. A federal judge in Ohio is set to hear oral arguments today in a lawsuit by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce over the Biden administration's Medicare drug price negotiations. It's the first legal challenge for the recently announced program that aims to help seniors with prescription drug costs. Former Vice President and 2024 Republican presidential candidate Mike Pence said he would consider a woman for running mate, but refused to say whether he would dine alone with her after having made a promise to his wife years ago.
Look, I respect the way anybody manages their marriage, and I never want to feel like I'm imposing my values on anybody.
Immigration activists have declared today a national day of action, and across the country, they're demanding an end to migrant detention and deportation. Catherine Barnett with Freedom to Thrive contends the Biden administration hasn't lived up to a commitment for a more just and humane immigration system.
In a nation of immigrants, we need to, and we can, begin to find a better solution.
This comes as a federal judge in Texas has thrown out the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals policy. And that state continues to clash with the White House over tough immigration measures. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. September 7th, our statement regarding, quote, the future of our nation and an urgent call to action for all Americans was issued by 13 presidential foundations and libraries. Here's an excerpt. As a diverse nation of people with different backgrounds and beliefs, democracy holds us together. We are a country rooted in the rule of law, where the protection of the rights of all people is paramount. At the same time, we live among our fellow citizens, underscoring the importance of compassion, tolerance, pluralism, and respect for others. Debate and disagreement are central features in a healthy democracy. Civility and respect in political discourse, whether in an election year or otherwise, are essential. Each of us has a role to play and responsibilities to uphold. Our elected officials must lead by example and govern effectively in ways that deliver for the American people. This, in turn, will help restore trust in public service. The rest of us must engage in civil dialogue, respect democratic institutions and rights, uphold safe, secure, and accessible elections, and contribute to local, state, or national improvement. By signing this statement, we reaffirm our commitment to the principles of democracy undergirding this great nation, protecting our freedom, and respecting our fellow citizens. When united by these convictions, America is stronger as a country and an inspiration for others. The full text of the statement is available at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at Mediasanctuary.org.
We've arrived at the beginning of the school year, and while we reflect on all that teachers do for children and the hardships which they face, providing our students safe spaces for education and growth, we also need to expand that appreciation to all of those working with young people. And of course, the support teams who provide specialized instructional and emotional care for children. I'm joined today by Nicole Porter Davis, president of the New York Art Therapy Association, to discuss how art therapy benefits the lives of young people, their families, and their communities.
Hello, wonderful to be here.
Yeah, so if you could just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about how you got into the field, what your training was.
I'm an art therapist and the clinical director for the Emerald Sketch, which is an art therapy trauma response program that I founded following the Sandy Hook tragedy as a direct responder. I'm also the president of the New York Art Therapy Association and the songwriter and producer for You and Us, a children's rock band built to bring attention and illuminate this crisis and need for more creative arts therapy in our country. I have a master's in creative arts therapy, where I went to Hahnemann, which is now Drexel University in Philadelphia, and they train in all the sciences, being music therapy, art therapy, and dance movement therapy. So it's very unique to go to a program like that, where I'm able to look at all the different techniques, as well as focusing on the art therapy specifically, which brings a very unique layer of psychoanalysis and assessment, because we have the visual art making process that the clients and patients make. So I personally double majored in undergrad with psychology and fine art. It's important in whichever creative science you're going to go into as a creative arts therapist to have lots of experience being a musician or being an artist, being a dancer, being a dramatist. Going into it, you have that and it's part of your lifestyle, essentially, right? It's like, that's my own personal balance in making the children's music right now while I'm still doing this really intense, difficult clinical work. I personally just became flooded with so much additional intellectual information about the psychology of human development that undergraduate just doesn't prepare one for. And then you come out of that master's program and there's all this clinical experience you have to gain to get board certification to then be licensed. In this nation, it's different state to state. There's no blanket coverage that says, okay, you've gone to this education program. Like in some states, it could be like you're moving in from another country and you have to re-educate yourself because of the political barriers to just provide services once you get that degree.
What are the types of services that art therapists provide, especially within the context of the classroom and outside of the classroom for young people?
Absolutely. I mean, so when I started, I focused in early childhood, and it's more on crisis treatment centers, right? We're on psychiatric units. We get work in hospitals working with cancer patients also of all ages, geriatric units. I personally focused within psychiatry, where I was working with all ages from age 2 to 102 post-graduation. But I chose then to specialize even deeper in early childhood, which is additional study and training. And trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy is another evidence-based, where we have lots of scientific research behind it. Again, because there's more people in the more general cognitive behavioral therapy world than within the arts therapies.
So could you describe a little bit more about that kind of scientific evidence-based ideas around art therapy, the cognitive that you had just mentioned, if you could go into a little bit more detail about that?
Yeah, the huge beauty and benefit of the arts therapies are the nonverbal process. You know, the neurobiological significance of going in and working creatively and engaging the subcortical region of the brain, right? Like our inner brain that's developed in early childhood. When we feel upset, when we feel disturbed, and we have a difficulty articulating ourselves, you know, and in the instance of acute trauma, it shuts down well over 95% of neural functioning in the whole system. This is why people develop chronic and challenging symptoms like disassociation or eating disorders, abuse. All of these maladaptive human behaviors typically stem from disturbance that goes untreated. Where with art therapy, we're coming in non-verbally, revisiting that early phase of development, that parent-child bond where we're gooing and we're guying, we're playing with sand and we're modeling those movements, we're drawing pictures. There's no pressure to tell the story, because telling the story typically induces symptomatic rashes. As a concrete example, someone might break out in hives if they're asked too many questions about something that disturbs them. And I think it's healthy to say something that disturbs someone, to normalize for people that the human experience in and of itself is challenging for most individuals. And then there's acute trauma that happens to people that absolutely deserves assessment and treatment. And the creative arts therapies are beautiful for all ages, and most significantly for the children in our country, and especially here in New York State. There's thousands of us available to work, and there's a crisis right now that disallows that from happening because of political barriers and funding. But these creative arts therapies, it's that neurobiological piece. So when we go in creatively, it then opens up more systems in the brain, in the human network, thus allowing one to integrate the disturbance in a nonverbal way, and they build strength and resiliency to then talk about it. that therapeutic relationship is really the nectar of healing and the scientific research of gaining greater balance, where you have to then tell the story to someone that then hears the story and acknowledges the story and says, I hear that story. I see that story. I feel that experience with you. What do you want to do with it? And then there's that free choice where one really takes control of what used to disturb them. That can be, let's rip it up and throw it away. Let's put it in a frame and hang it on the wall. Let's keep it between just us in this room, or let's get it on the cover of a newspaper, right? Like, it can be anything in between on a continuum that comforts that one individual or that one family or an entire community. So a wonderful example of beneficial outcomes, right? For instance, is some of the families from Newtown continue to seek art therapy through the Emerald Sketch. And this is, you know, going nearly 11 years ago. One of the teens describes what she's learned through art therapy as mental gymnastics. And I think that's a fascinating description coming from an adolescent mind, that she's learning and becoming well aware. Like, this is a child who I met as a seven-year-old. And knowing her in that early childhood phase, and now knowing them as a 17-year-old and seeing the growth and the progress, we do have the power to recognize our feelings, put them to imagery, and use the imagery to help us transform it and feel really good about that choice.
Can you talk a little bit about Emerald Sketch and sort of the genesis of that and where you see that type of experience translated to the larger field through training of other therapists and what you do with Emerald Sketch?
It comes back to the human connection, right? Like, I'm just very empathetic in addition to all of the art therapy training and the sensibility of, I had close family friends that lived in Sandy Hook at the time. So communicating with other humans on the globe is what helps engage actual real-time trauma response for each other in need. Our federal system has no system in place at all, and there's no large established nonprofit. The Red Cross focuses on blood. There's no one out there that focuses on mental health response and the assessment of a community's well-being after something horrible like a massacre. It's incredibly important, and this is the big reason Emerald Sketch exists, right? I did show up a few days following and brought in all my credentials. I just showed up with a little suitcase, knowing that I knew that there would be art supplies. I needed really myself to walk through that door, and it was called the Sandy Hook Healing Project at the time, and that only existed through the holiday, right? This happened in the middle of December 14th, 2012, so it was through the holiday. I basically was the one out of 11 clinicians that arrived and had the training for early childhood and crisis intervention. I took the helm and had the training and background to implement confidentiality waivers and assessment, PTSD scales that are embraced and used with civilians of veterans, family members that are in the armed forces. So we were using those right away, and I continue to use those and train other communities after disasters how to actually assess people and give them an idea of if they would benefit from the service, first of all, and if they need the service. So that's how it all started. It was basically doing a good thing and responding. And then Emerald Sketch came up with the name, thinking of the children, and green was the color of Sandy Hook School. Yeah, and Emerald is, you know, magical. It immediately brought up Wizard of Oz for many of them and the Emerald City and this concept of existing in the creative realm and letting yourself go into this metaphor rather than always focus on more like art therapy trauma response. It's like, this is the Emerald Sketch now. Come join here and process what you need to in a way that feels okay.
You've alluded to some of the issues that art therapists and clinicians that focus on art therapy are facing, specifically on New York State. Could you go into just a little bit of an explanation about this struggle that you're referring to?
Yes, definitely. So in New York State, there are several licenses within mental health practitioners. We have licensed creative arts therapists. We have psychoanalysts. Licensed creative arts therapists and psychoanalysts are always redlined. They're on there. Senators and congressmen and women are saying, yes, provide this service. There's a child mental health crisis in New York State. There are people on wait lists everywhere, essentially, trying to get services for their families. And there aren't enough clinicians to service it. Meanwhile, there are several thousand that are trained, board certified, and licensed by the state of New York. But then it seems the governor continually devalues that license and has every opportunity, for instance, put us into bills that allows us to work in schools. Put us into the bill that allows the LCAT to be covered by Medicaid and Medicare. as the school year goes on, revisit these bills specifically as they come up and they're on the floor in Albany, because it's a very important issue. And that's why I'm passionate about being the president of the New York Art Therapy Association. Before 2023, licensed creative arts therapists didn't